Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC. Tennessee just sounds perfect. Whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
Hey, this is Annie.
And Samantha.
And welcome to Stuff I Never Told You, a production of iHeartRadio. And it is time once again for another edition of Female First, which means we are once again thrilled to be joined by the fantastic, the fabulous Eves. Welcome, Eves.
Hello, yay. Thank you.
We are so happy to have you, as always. Happy belated birthday.
Happy belated birthday.
Did you I like the song.
Do anything of note?
of note? I don't know if I would say it was of note, but all I did was I read a lot that day. And then I just worked, if that's interesting. And then I weightlifted that day and I went out to eat. So it was chill. I really had no plans. I kept asking myself before the day, like, what do I want to do? And I was like, I don't really know. So I guess it's fine for me to not think so hard about it. If, you know, I don't know. I have a trip planned for later, but it's technically for my birthday, but it's not happening on my birthday. So, hey, I was just like, I'll just chill.
I love that.
Yeah.
Sometimes just having a relaxed day is the best.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think there can be so much pressure on birthdays. And sometimes it's nice to be like, you know what? I'll just do whatever it is I want. Mm-hmm. And then I'll do a trip later and that's fine. Like, I don't know. I'm taking the pressure off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does. Yeah.
Yeah. You're always up to stuff, Eves. I'm always interested to hear what your trips you're going on and everything.
I try to keep things interesting. So
I think you do. I think you do.
Very much so.
Yes. I love checking in with your cat sitting and your various travel.
Yeah, and the lifting was new to me. And I was like, what? You're just a pile of secrets.
A pile of secrets.
I don't know. That's the best I could think of at the point. It's too early.
I think that's a great title for something.
All this secrets.
You're a bundle of secrets. How's that better? Is that better?
I like it. Pile is like,
It seems like a mistake. That's where like you just like just go ahead and just throw things into a pile. It's all my secrets over here. We'll put it in a bundle.
Thank you. That's a lot neater.
I love it. Well, speaking of someone who got up to a lot in their life, can you tell us who we're talking about today, Eves?
Yes. So we're talking today about Frances Ann Rollin Whipper. And she was, I talked about her in a recent episode of On Theme, which is another podcast that I do with my co-host Katie Mitchell. And that one's about Black storytelling. And we did an episode on diaries that Black women wrote in history. And Frances Ann Rollin Whipper was one of the people who wrote diaries. She had a diary that is one of the earliest known diaries written by a Black Southern woman that she wrote in 1868. It's like a year's worth of her recordings from that year. And it's a pretty interesting year in her life. So I enjoyed reading it. And I think y'all know from other episodes of Female First that like, I really enjoy letters and journals that people have from their travels. Like, I think we talked about Mary Seacole, people's autobiographies, when they have just kind of a daily log of the things that they did, is super fascinating to me, even though it's like the most mundane things. You know, we'll talk about people who have all these big accomplishments and traveled all over the world and were like kavutsing with different dignitaries, and all that stuff is cool. But I also like the everyday musings of getting to know people's internal processes and how they choose to express those. So I was fascinated by Frances Ann Rollin Whipper's diary, and she also had a first, and she wrote the first full-length biography by a Black American about a free-born Black person. So that is part of her story as well, and she's just like a super interesting person. So that's what we'll be talking about today.
I agree with you. I love diaries. I love like just random notes you can find. I love these like instances. I think they paint such a good picture of what was going on at the time. Even if it can seem kind of mundane, I'm fascinated by it. Like, this is what people were worried about, or this was what was going on, or I think it's such a great snapshot of stuff. So I agree with you, Eve.
This episode is brought to you by Snagajob. Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring.
With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time, or full-time.
You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that.
With their easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way.
Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly.
Visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242-424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money, so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC. Well, shall we get into the history?
Sure. So Frances Ann Rollin was born free in November of 1845 in Charleston, South Carolina. And her parents were Margaret. Not sure which way to pronounce that, but Margaret and William Rollin, and they were also free. Not much more beyond her being free is known about her mother, but her father was like from this wealthy, quote unquote, mulatto side. And their family ended up on a plantation near Charleston and started getting into the lumber trade. So he was kind of doing some merchant stuff, buying property. And their family had enslaved three people, I've seen. I'm not sure if that's like how many people they had enslaved over time, if they had even more than that. But they also had trading connections with other cities. So they were these free people of color who had high status in society and basically gained a lot of privilege and access to things by virtue of their proximity to whiteness. So that's part of their history. But Frances, she had four sisters. They were Charlotte, Catherine, Louisa, and Florence. And Frances was the oldest of all of them. And they all got good educations. Like I was just saying, she, you know, they had money. So even though it was illegal for Black folks at the time, Black schooling was, still they were able to be educated. And Frances went to private schools and she had tutors in Charleston. And she learned French and she, you know, had access to education because of her parents, and all her other sisters did as well. But at the same time, the Civil War was about to pop off and things were looking dicey for free Black people in the South. You know, all of this, at the end of the day, if you're perceived as Black, you're perceived as Black. So, you know, even free people of color faced difficulties at the time. And in 1859, Frances ended up going to Philadelphia and she began attending the Institute for Colored Youth, which was founded by Quakers. And she lived there with musician Morris Brown's family, and her sisters followed her up there not long afterwards. And so for the next 6 years, she stayed in Philadelphia. I saw that she wasn't really in communication with her parents during that time that we know of. And she seemingly didn't graduate from the Institute, so she may have had to work at the time. But either way, after the Civil War, she went back to Charleston to teach Black people who had recently been emancipated. She taught at a Freedmen's Bureau school, and then she taught at an American Missionary Society school. And when there is a notable case in her history, and that's when she was traveling on a steamer to Beaufort, South Carolina. The captain, whose name was W.T. McNulty, denied her access to a first-class cabin. She said that he had violated a military order. And so at that point, he was tried before a military court, and he was found guilty, and he got fined $250 in 1867, which I don't know how much that is in today's dollars, but it's a lot more. So around this time, she met Martin R. Delaney. And at this point, he was a major in the Army and he worked for the Freedmen's Bureau. And he supported her. He was during her case process. And I don't know exactly how this conversation looked, but I'm very curious about it because she told him that she wanted a literary career. And he encouraged her to write his biography, and she agreed. And there's something about this interaction that really fascinates me, like as a writer. I just want to know how that conversation went, because she hadn't written any biographies up to this point. So one, to ask somebody to write your biography, I feel like you have to feel a way about yourself where you're like, okay, you know, I've done some things and I want somebody to write my biography. And at this point, they had just met. Like I'm not sure how long they knew each other up until this point, but I don't think they were deep in the trenches of friendship. And she also wasn't known for writing full length works, if barely anything at this point, because she was doing, I believe, more teaching up until this point. But anyway, I'm very curious about this conversation. I don't think there are any records of this because it seems like there's a lot of vagueness around this. But when I'm looking at her biography, I just like this is a flashpoint for her. This is the first that we're talking about today. And to not know exactly why he asked her, what he thought her merits were of being able to do this, is very interesting to me. So anyway, that's that's my aside. But she hoped that, you know, this biography would launch her literary career. And he gave her all these materials, all these papers, and he told her, hey, I will support you financially while you work on this book. And she went to Boston to write the book, and she stayed there for 8 months. So this is in 1868, and that's the year that we have where she writes in her diary. And so all her surviving diary entries are from that year. I'm not sure if she had diary, if she was doing diary entries before then or after then. She very well could have been, but this is the extant diary that we have of hers. And in it, She is very, she's very kind of like, before I was want to say that she was, she's uppity. At first I kind of felt like, hey, I want to be her friend. But then I realized that she kind of had like, her class consciousness was not completely there. Like she was a little too bougie for my taste. But there, if you read her diary, there are parts of it that I kind of like, oh, I want to be her friend, because she's kind of like, she's going to lectures for people like Charles Dickens and Ralph Waldo Emerson and abolitionists. She's got to know people like the abolitionist William Lloyd Garrison, Wendell Phillips, and William Nail, as well as this scholar named Richard Greener. And she talks about the difficulties that she had during that year in her diary. She talks about Martin Delaney and the troubles that she was going through with him in that relationship, because apparently there was some infidelity later on. And she talks about how he wrote her a love letter. And then there are also these other moments where she's in her very intellectual flow, where she's talking about how she went to these lectures and she read this person's work and she thought he needed to do better. So, and she talks about how she had friends who she would talk to about some of the literary works that she had read and how their opinions on them could be improved. But yeah, so she, you can read her diary online. It is digitized online, so it's free. Everybody can go check it out and read all of her entries. There have been people, volunteers who worked on transcribing everything in her diary. So if you're interested in diary entries like we are here on Sminty, then you can check those out. But the thing about it is Delaney didn't keep sending her money. So she had to sew and be a copyist, I think, to support herself, which is sad because I'm just trying to step in her shoes and think like, I want this thing to launch my career. And she's already getting a taste of how this whole writing life is. You don't get paid when you're supposed to. So she had to support herself, but she did it. And clearly she was dedicated to that work because she continued it. And she wrote the book that ended up being called Life and Public Services of Major Martin R. Delaney. That was published in 1868. And later on, years later, in 1883, it was reissued. But the publisher, Lee and Shepherd, they published the biography under a pseudonym that was Frank A. Rollin. And that was seemingly the publisher's decision because they thought people weren't ready to have a book by a Black woman. But her family also did call her Frank. So it seems like it was a fine compromise for her, I guess, because she was like, well, I guess they already call me Frank anyway, so it's cool. But yeah, by July of 1868, she had left Boston and she went to Columbia, South Carolina, which is my birthplace, which is not a thing people really need to know, but it is. So there's a link there. And she had gotten a job as a copyist, and William James Whipper had offered her the job. And he was a lawyer from the North who had recently moved to South Carolina and was elected to the state legislature. And he had people in his family already who were writers, editors, and abolitionists. So the work that he ended up doing in politics and in editing, you know, that is something that was in his family already. And he, though, had his own controversies. So he has his own history of the work that he did in what in the Republican Party at the time during Reconstruction. And it said that he was often charged with political corruption and he had a reputation for gambling and drinking and just, it seemed like being kind of like a party guy who was sometimes up to no good, but like did a lot. But he offered Francis the job. And when he did, he had a wife, but his wife died before Frances ended up coming to Columbia. And when she got to Columbia in August, he proposed to her in less than 2 months. So they had their whole dating period, but he proposed pretty quickly. But seemingly she was into it. Can't tell you why, if she was just that smitten with him or if there were other motivations, I have no idea. But she, that because that's quick. But, you know, she went to talk to her parents about it. And her father said the same thing. He said, it's too soon. But her sister, Charlotte, said, like, it might have been some class stuff going on, because there is a quote from a publication in which Charlotte says, in fact, our family never condescended to notice such small people as Elliot and Whipper, although Whipper married our sister, Frances. They are both Negroes, and our family is French. So, you know, she was recognizing their status as mulattoes, and you can see from that sentiment that she and her sisters as well distanced themselves from other Black people and kind of looked down on lower class folks. They cared a lot about appearances and politeness and respectability politics. And it is clear that they gained favor from this. Like, there's a lot in sources about them of talk about how elegant they were, how refined they were, how polite they were, how they were able to move through these political spaces. Kind of like, they're not like the other darkies situation with them and a do around their complexion, all of that kind of stuff going on. So they were clearly eating that up, and it worked in their favor. They already had wealth, so they already had access to that kind of status and all the trappings that came along with it. But the way that they clearly carried themselves in like socialite society also helped them. So they were viewed pretty positively by the elite, essentially. And it's interesting, though, because while it's the interplay of like lack of consciousness, but also some, they did also pay attention to racial issues and issues of gender, because they still advocated for equal rights for Black people. And they still, all of the sisters, including Frances, still advocated for equal rights for women. But, you know, I guess we contain multitudes, and they definitely did. And we also like have to consider the way that people of color moved in the Reconstruction era when they got a little taste of, you know, a post-slavery South, and how I'm sure all of that glory and respectability looked like, you know, a shiny object at the end of a tunnel. And they clearly got wrapped up into that. But anyway, even with the disavowal of her father's disavowal about her soon-to-be husband, she still got married in September of 1868. And she edited the Beaufort Tribune, and she wrote some pieces for other newspapers under a pen name. And she and her sisters advocated for rights during this time. And Frances ended up having four children who lived beyond infancy, although I think one of her other children also died a little bit later on, but still young. But either way, she and her sisters were moving through these spheres in Columbia. And her father died in 1880, and she began to administer the estate, but her mother challenged her administration. I'm not sure. The suit didn't go to trial, and I'm not sure exactly why she challenged it, but that happened. And by that year, Frances was also living in Washington, D.C. That was with her kids, but without her husband. So her husband was in South Carolina, and he was still doing his political thing, and apparently had a mistress at this time, I believe. And Frances was in D.C., and she was still publishing articles and essays, and eventually landed a job as a copyist with the U.S. Department of Lands. She did lose that job, and in 1885, when the Democrats gained control of the White House. But after that year, between 1885 and 1889, it's unclear exactly what she did from work. But she still got all of her children were going to school. They graduated from Howard University, and she kept writing, though. It seems like she wrote under pseudonyms that are some of which are unknown. But she kept writing, and sometime after the mid-1890s, she had to go back to South Carolina. Her health wasn't in the best shape, and she ended up dying in Beaufort, South Carolina on October 17th, 1901 of tuberculosis. And today she's buried in Beaufort, South Carolina.
This episode is brought to you by Snagajob. Snagajob is where America goes to hire with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring.
With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time, or full-time.
You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that.
With their easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way.
Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly.
Visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242-424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire. This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at a historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
Yeah, I mean, once again, it's quite a story. It's hard to imagine having your diary digitized.
Yeah. Isn't it?
I mean, it sounds like she would be cool with it.
Right.
But I mean, I would too. Mine, I would too. But it's kind of odd to think everyone can go and read it.
Yeah. Right. But it's interesting because the bit you read from the sister, I was like, this kind of reminds me of like a Jane Austen novel. Like, this feels like it's a dialogue straight out of, except for it's from the Black community perspective or the, you know, like, freed Black community. I'm like, huh, this feels very, like, enriched in, like, society and our place in life and then who is beneath us. And I was like, maybe it's because we just did Pride and Prejudice. But I'm like, this feels familiar.
Yeah, there's, I can read a quote from her diary if you want to hear one.
Yeah,
it's actually really... So like we talked about at the beginning of the episode, the diaries that people wrote, they allow people to have a lot of insight into what daily life was like for different kinds of people. So not only did she talk about her socialite life, she was also talking about things that happened in society that, you know, we have other records of, but, you know, we get more of this personal insight of. So this is one journal entry that she had in 1868. This was on August 2nd. So I think that was, she reached Columbia this day. So she says in this diary entry, reached Columbia about 6 o'clock. Mr. Hipper met me at the depot with his buggy and took me to my boarding place where an elegant and spacious room awaited me. Breakfast was tempting. My dear friend, Mr. Adams, was in to see me very soon after my arrival. Charlotte came to see me in the morning, but Kate did not. Went to church in the morning with Harry Maxwell and Mr. Adams. The governor and all the members were there. Quite an excitement created on account of the disappearance of Joe Howard after the visit of the Ku Klux Klan at night. So that's the end of that journal entry. And it's a pretty shock. It's a cliffhanger, right?
Yeah.
it's kind of like you buried the lead in that one. You're talking about your elegant and spacious room. But I do think it's interesting now that I think about that journal entry, the contrast between its beginning and its end, because she's talking about this fancy situation where she's being catered to, but at the same time, she's saying racial, the reckoning of racial violence happening around her. And it's like,
right.
Those things are right next to each other. She's in Columbia, South Carolina, you know?
Yeah.
It's a lot. It's a lot going on around her. So, yeah, interesting to see some of her talk about some of those things. She talked about some of the anti-slavery meetings that she goes to. So she had her hands in all these parts of society and wrote about it in her diary. And I don't want my diary published. I don't.
Well, you know, now that I'm thinking about it, this is one of the interesting things about diaries, is that, at least in my understanding of them, you're writing it for yourself with the idea no one else will ever read it.
That's a thought.
Which is such a fascinating, I've never really considered it before, but that is interesting, that you're essentially just writing this thing to help you process or think about things, but it is not for anyone else to read. And, you know, I like, when I travel, I always keep a diary, and it's mostly so I can, like, go back and remember things. I can, oh, yeah, I remember that. But it's never with the idea I will publish it. So this is fascinating that her diary got published.
Yeah.
Well, I also don't put in that I feel like she had some pretty good language in hers. Mine is right. Mostly like, I just need to write it down before I forget what happened.
Yeah, it's going to be incoherent sometimes.
Right. I think mine was just like a lot of exclamation points and asterisks going, but why?
I'm just here to process.
Right. Or just be sad. Again, like, it's interesting though, the way she does build it up into like her day, and then just like the last comment of like the Ku Klux Klan, they're here, cool. Like,
yeah,
you're like, oh god, what's happening?
Once again, a very good snapshot of what was going on. I have to check it out.
I want to look through it.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much, as always, Eves, for being here, for braving the technical difficulties that the Sminty team has had over the past few days. It just keeps happening. And yes, once again, belated happy birthday.
Thank you.
Where can the good listeners find you?
You can find me on many other episodes of Sminty, doing Female First, talking about other women in history. And you can also find me on Instagram at Not Apologizing, or you can just go to my website, which is evesjeffcoat.com. That's Eve spelled with Y-V-E-S, Jeffcoat, just like it sounds, basically. And you can check me out on Theme. That is the podcast that I mentioned at the top of the episode that I co-host with Katie Mitchell. That is a podcast about Black storytelling in all of its forms. And if you're interested in hearing about other diaries, we have a recent episode on that called Diary Dialogues. So you can go check that out and all the other episodes. Yeah, that's it.
A good title.
Yeah.
For the episode.
Love it. Thank you. Love it.
Well,
listeners, go do that if you haven't done it already. If you would like to contact us, you can. You can email us at stephanieamomstuff@iheartmedia.com. You can find us on Twitter at @MomStuffPodcast or on Instagram and TikTok at @StuffWhoNeverToldYou. We have a Tee Public store and we have a book you can get wherever you get your books. Thanks as always to our super producer, Christina, our executive producer, Maya, and our contributor, Joey.
Thank you.
And thanks to you for listening. Stuff I Never Told You is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can check out the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC. Tennessee just sounds perfect. Whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
Happy Pride from Tomboy X. Celebrating Pride and the queer community all year. Queer founded, queer run, and the makers of the original boxer briefs for women. Creating sustainable size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies so you feel comfortable in your own skin. Tomboy X just dropped their Pride 24 collection. Obsessively fit tested for all day comfort in sizes 3 extra small through 6X. Visit TomboyX.com.